it's still too early for all of this. It's really, really difficult to try to stay as quiet as we can when talking about professional wrestling in the house because everyone is still asleep. But hello, all you Biconics of wrestling nerds out there. And welcome to another rendition of the Collision Collective Review, your weekly AEW Collision Review team. I am El Jefe himself, and joining with me, we have the full squad today, and I'm super happy because it's been a hot minute since all of us have been in the same room. First and foremost, you can catch him doing the Rampage reviews with me, El Buntador himself, the nerdy Puerto Rican, Adolfo. Good morning. How are we?
Saludos, programas. I am good, Mikey. Jefe, I am well, and we'll try to be nice and quiet for everyone, and we'll make it an ASMR for you.
You guys can be loud because it's a lot later in the day than it is for me. And then, of course, back from being able to go to Revolution, Lucky Man himself.
Jealous.
I know, super jealous. But you can find him here with us as well as popping in on some other things as well.
Macho
Rodriguez himself, Luis, my friend. Good morning. How are we?
I'm excited to talk about this Collision. We have some good stories that are shaping up for the next month or so. So let's get into it.
Absolutely. I will say, I feel that AEW this week has kind of switched it into gears, which is something that we've been asking for the last couple of months or so. And I feel that it's going to continue. Spoiler alert, I'm looking forward to Big Business, but that's going to be later this week for the review for that. So I'm super excited. But we are here to review AEW Collision that took place Saturday, March 9th, 2024. So let's begin. Collision this week opens up with a match between Bryan Danielson and Shane Taylor of Shane Taylor Promotions. And Danielson just casually just dropping a great... Danielson and Shane Taylor just casually dropping a good match. I thought this was fantastic. If I'm going to be completely honest, I feel that from just wrestling and not spectacle,
I agree.
This is probably my favorite match of the night.
No, I was going to say, I love how much. Oh, yeah, 15 chops. I love
Shane
the fact
Taylor
that Bryan has changed his method of working with people. He worked from under a lot. Like, he worked from the bottom a lot, and you could tell, like, he was all about, like, let me go out there and let me show you guys how dominant Shane Taylor could be. And I love the fact that the commentators also played it up. They were playing it up like almost like he was dominating Bryan Danielson. And I love that. I thought that was such a great way to progress the match forward. And I mean, we keep seeing Shane Taylor go out there and take these, take these losses. But I think his losses are different than everybody else's. I think Shane Taylor and Queen Amidala. Yeah, I think their losses specifically, all they're doing is showcasing them to the audience, because I think over the next year that both of these people are going to be higher up on the roster. And I think they're just kind of like trying to remind people, like, this is the future. These are going to be AEW stars. Like, just keep watching them, be patient, because they're not jobbers. They're not enhancement talent. Right now, we're just letting you get to know them. I thought this match was really good.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you all that this helped to showcase Shane Taylor even further. It's again one of those good bad things that you know the only way you really get to see Shane Taylor and how good and consistent he is over on ROH. And I just hope that the majority of the audience doesn't just see Shane Taylor taking the loss from Bryan Danielson and considering him a jobber, but does fully appreciate the fact that yes, you know, Danielson was, you know, fighting from the bottom, dare I say, in a dog fight for his life, you know, against Shane Taylor, and how it did showcase yeah. as you said, how dominant Shane Taylor is.
I agree. I continue to be impressed, and that Collision is using Shane Taylor a lot, which is really, really nice. And, you know, I agree with you, Macho, that Shane Taylor's losses are a little bit different than other Ring of Honor's talent's losses when they come and face someone on AEW. But I thought this was a fantastic opener. This was really fun. And then it got even better. So as soon as the match is over, Elevated plays and out comes Will Ospreay. So him in his tracksuit, which was fantastic. I love it. Will first begins his promo by stating that he's super excited once again to be in AEW. And he appreciates everything that Danielson has done. Danielson is one of those big time greats, and he has done a lot for the world of professional wrestling. And so Will manages to thank him before going into what we're used to seeing Will Ospreay be, which is such a cocky little wrestler, which I love so much. And he says, "You interrupted my main event on Dynamite, so I returned the favor, and how about we have a match to, you know, go for it?" Danielson responds, says that he loves Will Ospreay, welcomes him to All Elite, and then proposes that these two have a match at Dynasty, and they both shake on it. So we have our first official match for AEW Dynasty in April, Ospreay and Danielson. I can't speak for everybody else here, but when I got that official confirmation, and then 2 minutes later when I got the official graphic, I may or may not have needed a towel because I was sweating so much at how much the possibility of this match is going to rule. I'm excited. Will Ospreay is one of my favorite wrestlers of this current era of talent that we have right now. And Danielson's always phenomenal. So just the possibility of these two, it's like Wrestle Dream and Forbidden Door have come early for us if you're in AEW.
Yeah. And you know, their styles are, in my humble opinion, their styles are vastly different. So it's going to be really interesting to see how, you know, to see if Ospreay can switch gears to the mat work like Danielson does, or if Danielson can switch gears to do the high energy flying moves that Ospreay does, you know. So it's going to be very interesting match to me.
The words in which Will Ospreay used, almost like, you know, he did talk about sandwiches, which who doesn't love sandwiches? I mean, we're all Joey Tribbiani inside. We all love sandwiches. But he talks about how Bryan Danielson is the standard backstage. Mm. And that to me felt like, for him using that verbiage, saying that Bryan like inspires so many people, it feels to me almost like Bryan is saying like, I'm on my way out. I got maybe like 4 months left. And then this is going to be your baby. So you take it and run with it. And that's kind of how I'm looking at it. And I also wanted to do something a little fun, if you guys would allow me. Because this match is going to be so interesting with their different styles, I have two matches I recommend people go watch because I think it's the closest we're going to get to this. And that is William Regal versus Rob Van Dam for the Intercontinental Championship. And if you wanted a throwback, because I think these two wrestlers are going to mirror these guys. And if you don't agree with me that one of these wrestlers are as good as Will Ospreay, then you didn't watch professional wrestling in the 90s. But go back and watch Bret the Hitman Hart versus the 1-2-3 Kid. That match to me is what this match is going to be. That's going to set the blueprint. When I was thinking about the different styles, Bryan works a very Bret style. And 1-2-3 Kid was Will Ospreay before Will Ospreay. He was a tall, lanky guy who can do a lot of things. And he was never really taken seriously as the top of the card. But Will Ospreay is taken seriously. He's the best wrestler in the world right now, or he's 1A to 1B, depending on who you think it is. If it's Bryan or Kenny or Will or Okada, it's you pick, you know, but yeah, those are the two matches that I feel like I'm gonna watch them a lot, getting ready for this.
I am super excited. the fact that we get to have so many good, amazing dream matches, quote unquote, and I know that's a term that is always like used loosely in the base, you know, in the wrestling world. But honestly, Danielson and Ospreay is a match that I've been wanting for quite some time now. And the fact that we get to have it at Dynasty in a couple of weeks in April, I'm super ecstatic for it. I can't wait. It's gonna be great. Then we get a trios match, which is basically a glorified squash match here on the Biconics. We saw the new Elite, which is made up of our EVPs, Matthew and Nicholas Jackson. Need to make sure that that's the name we're using until they go back to being the full Young Bucks.
The full Young Bucks.
And their new associate, the Rainmaker, Kazuchika Okada. All three of them coming up from the Cody Vader, as we call it around here. And they took on some ROH talent in the form of John Cruz, Liam Gray, and Adrian Alanis. That is John Cruz, not Serpentico. Don't let Nyla Rose tell you differently.
That scumbag Serpentico.
So as I mentioned, this match was what it was. It was a squash match to get Okada and the EVPs the win here, which is important because now that Okada is signed full-time, and he's looking to relocate here to the U.S. since he's going to be in AEW full-time. The match itself was fine. I enjoyed it, though. I'm a sucker anytime John Cruz is in the ring. He's one of my current favorite heel talents they use in ROH just because of how campy he is in terms of his heel style. But he's also a phenomenal wrestler. So before we get into what happened, any quick thoughts from either one of my co-hosts about Okada's first win in AEW like, as a full-time member?
He's the next big thing, and the crowd is definitely eating it all up. I don't know how long it's going to last unless they don't. They're going to need to figure out a way to keep him as a heel because I think this guy is so good bell to bell that he's going to sway fans. It's going to be one of those things where fans are just going to wind up cheering him regardless of the dastardly things that he does.
Yeah. I'm probably alone on this island and that's fine. The match's good. The match did what it had to do. But my star of the match was John Cruz. I feel that he is in a very elite group of jobber heels that are still so entertaining. Even when they lose, you still love them, you know, and they stick out in your mind. So that's just my quick two cents of it. Because, you know, the match, it was what it was, you know, it was a squash match. And Okada was showcased, which is what they wanted to do. You know, but John Cruz, I mean,
Cruz is special.
Of that match.
You could tell that it was developed. This match was developed however they wrote it out. It was for Okada's benefit. I mean, being someone who's seen the Young Bucks a handful of times, you know, if you've seen one Young Bucks match, you've seen them all. Like, you don't need to watch. They're all the same. They're all the same.
Yeah. So. Right. Yes, exactly. Let me ask you two this, though. Do you think it's going to benefit Okada to have the EVPs keep feeding him like a bunch of squash matches? And then, you know, like maybe 2 or 3 weeks down the line, finally get like a real match? Or should they start giving Okada some, dare I say, more challenging matches that he can win at to really show people how dominant he is?
So I think, and this is just my speculation because this also kind of goes with what happened after the match itself, I think probably what they're going to do is if they're not going to have more trios matches like this with the Bucks and Okada being the new elite, so to speak, I think honestly Okada will probably end up feuding with Pac for a little bit, because we did get an announcement later in the show that with Darby and Sting vacating the tag titles and that tournament's happening, I think the Bucks are going to end up in that tournament and they'll be doing that. And then Okada will probably feud with Pac for a little bit. I originally had pinned Okada and Kingston to go back and forth for a little bit, but now that Pac has officially returned, I think that's going to be Okada's first singles feud. I'm a little hesitant to throw Okada into a feud immediately since signing and debuting only a few days prior at Dynamite, but I feel that Okada is not a new talent, so to speak, and his legacy precedes him, that I think it's fine to put him in there. We just need to be careful not to shoot him out of the cannon too quickly, because then if we keep feeding him feuds and he keeps winning, then we're going to slowly run out of people for Okada to have good lengthy feuds with. That's just my take. I like when new talent comes in, especially established talent. I just don't want them, because AEW's biggest problem is they get this new talent, they shoot him into big feuds, and then they get lost in the shuffle ever after the big feuds, which I'm going to eat crow when we get to see a certain women's wrestler come out later tonight.
The description in which you said bringing in talent, putting him in a big feud, and then them getting lost in the shuffle. I wasn't sure if you were talking about the AEW roster or just the women's division. Because that's what it seems. That's what seems to happen.
But, I mean,
I love the idea of Pac versus Okada, because I don't think it's going to be a one-off match, and I think it also will. It'll enamor the crowd. They'll get very excited to see Okada and Pac go out there and throw 5-6-star matches, and they'll be going at each other. And I don't know if they'll trade wins. I don't think Okada's going to come in and take any losses anytime soon. But I mean, you think about it. Aren't Pac's buddies like Penta and Rey Fénix? Like, think about that potential of the six of these men going out there and having these phenomenal matches. I mean, you have four phenomenal talents and Matt and Nick. So it's going to be really good. You know what I mean?
And honestly, I think the original prime probably was the new Elite versus Death Triangle. But since Vray is still out on injury right now, I feel that's why we have Kingston in this spot, which I don't necessarily mind. Like, more King of the Bums, please, for my television screen. So let's talk about what happened afterwards. So after the match, Okada and EVPs are in the ring celebrating. Kingston comes out to get back at them for the EVP trigger and Okada hitting Kingston on Dynamite. It becomes a 3-on-1 situation. Penta comes out in a very awesome looking Venom style mask and makeup design. I was just like, I love Penta. You're so great. Then it becomes a 2-on-3 situation. And then we get the official in-ring return in the arena, in the studio, whatever you want to call it, of the Bastard Pop. We did get a little vignette of him at Revolution that he was coming back, and here he is. And then he squares up with Okada. I'm like, I forgot how short you are, Pac, but this is amazing. Yeah. They trade blows for a little bit. That's
funny.
Okada and the EVPs get out of the ring. And then we get a six-man tag set up for Big Business on Dynamite this upcoming Wednesday. The new Elite versus Kingston, Penta, and Pac, which I'm really excited for. I'm super happy that Pac is back from injury. I have missed him in the men's division because I feel that Pac is bringing something that's been missing for the last few months in the men's division in terms of style of wrestling. But I have to say, I'm excited that how Big Business is shaping up, because there's a lot of potential matches to be very, very fun.
Yeah, definitely.
So great. So speaking of Big Business, I normally don't include recaps, but I feel that it's important because they're touting it to be this way. We get a recap by reminding us that it's going to be Darby and Jay White at Big Business, which is a first time match ever between the two of them, which I'm like,
I'd like to say something about this.
How do you have these two never crossed paths before?
Part of the thing that made JF so popular in AEW was the fact that he blurred the lines and he said things that you and I were thinking. And I love the fact that Darby tells Jay, you had all these 5-star matches across the globe and you were like, you know, main eventing Wrestle Kingdom and like the Tokyo Dome. And then you came here and what have you done? That's what we've been complaining about with Jay White. Fans all across like the United States have been bitching about Jay White not getting his fair due. This dude is as good as anybody in the ring. He has wins over Okada. He has wins over Tanahashi. This guy is, he's an elite level performer and they haven't done anything. And the fact that Darby called that out, I feel like that just adds a layer to this match. Mm. And I'm really hoping that this is given enough time because the two of these guys, this would be, I would like to see this as a feud for them. I don't want it to be a one-off. Like let Darby, let this be Darby's best match he's ever had to keep him away from Everest. Just like, that, you know,
yeah.
Don't go climb that. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please be careful, Darby. And I don't want to rehash what was talked about on Dynamite, but the promo he gave on Dynamite made me worried a little bit. I'm like, don't say that. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, Darby, but don't do that. I want you to slow down, but yeah, I also want you to be okay. Limit. So just, I was like, please like, be careful when you go climb Everest.
Don't do it.
Don't cough and
Yeah.
Just be careful. Yeah. Don't cough and drop off the top of the peak.
That's all I ask. Don't cough and drop off the top of the peak.
Exactly. So we'll discuss more about what is set for Big Business towards the end when we cover our bumpers. So then we lead into a very quick women's match, which is the only women's match of the evening. Collision, we're better than this. But we saw Toni Storm, just kidding, Mariah May doing her best Toni Storm cosplay. I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of happy they decided to give Toni's old gimmick to Mariah. I was like, she made me laugh because I was like, wait a minute, Toni's coming out as her old self? What is this? And then I saw the long blonde hair. I'm like, oh, they got me at Revolution. Which was great because Deonna did say she wanted the old Toni, so here we go. But we saw Mariah May taking on ROH talent, love her to death, from the infantry, Trish Adora. I love Trish so much. And this was a short match. There was a small back and forth. Trish did dominate the first half of this match a little bit, but then Mariah May came back and she picked up the victory here. I need more women's matches and I need more time, but I guess because we got a women's segment immediately following after this, it's fine. But Collision, we're normally better than this. We get 2-3 women's matches a week. I need more women on my screen.
Yeah.
I also wonder if it had to do with, you know, this was pre-taped and wondering if there were travel issues because that seems to be plaguing everyone, as well as visa issues are all around the board. Looking at you, Texas promoter, holding CMLL visas hostage and lots of things having to be changed in AEW. We'll talk about that when we get to later part of it. So the match itself was fine. I love that we continued to get to showcase Trish. If you haven't gone out of your way to see her match against Julia, you know, from Battle in the Valley, fantastic. Which, shout out to, I forget her name, but CMLL talent beat Julia to become the new champion, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of fun. But yeah, the match itself was fine. Yeah. Trish was great. Mariah was great. It was just really, really short.
Yeah, you know, if you're going to have one woman's match, at least, especially if you have two wrestlers of this caliber, give them time to work, man, because that was just too short. It was too short. You know, especially with Trish Adora. I mean, how about that German suplex from her knees? Like,
yeah,
hello. You know, she's a great worker. Especially if we're trying to build up Mariah May, I feel like she keeps getting tossed into these, you know, short matches, but you can see we were kind of talking about this, and this is along the lines of my thoughts on Liv Morgan. But you can see, like, she has flashes of, dare I say, excellence in her matches, but because her matches have all been just, you know, so short and condensed, and she's, you know, she's playing this this character to this, you know, roadie, dare I say, to Toni Storm.
Yeah, I agree. Like, when I look at Mirai, I look at her as the queen of the short match. I mean, she's 5-0 right now as a performer in AEW, and she is a really good worker. There, she's not been given a lot of opportunities, but I look at her as AEW's version of Tiffany Stratton. That's kind of how I look at it. She may not be on par with Tiffany, because we just, nobody knew Tiffany was this good. But as for Mariah May, it was just, when I watch her, I think to myself, like, obviously the story is going to be centered around her and Tony eventually going at it. It, now we just need to know, like, are we going to go the Mickie James and Trish Stratus route, where, like, Mariah May becomes champion, and, you know, she kind of like crumbles Tony's world? Or are we going to go Damian Sandow in The Miz, where there's no real payoff because we have Mercedes Moné about to walk into the building? That's the hardest part about this. And that's kind of one of these things where I'm wondering, like, I'm worried, but with Mercedes Moné potentially walking into the building, this isn't a great showcase for her. For her to see women get like 6 minutes, I mean, and for them to just rehash a feud that we just went through, I don't know how this excites the women backstage, and it didn't excite me as a fan, and I was just underwhelmed by the whole thing.
Yeah, so we'll save my discussion with Mercedes when we go over the bumpers for Big Business, but I'm going to preview it right now. If she doesn't debut at Big Business or make an appearance in any fashion, I'm going to look at AEW with the Rock eyebrow raise. I'm like, come again? I'm not expecting her to wrestle at Big Business, but it's like the worst kept secret that she's going to be debuting in AEW at Big Business. But I'll discuss all that when we get to it, because then we probably had one of the funner segments of the evening. We had our first ever Tony Awards with the eye, because we don't want to get copyright.
Tony with an eye.
So Tony Storm comes out in her best flapper getup. I loved it so much. Standing there with Luther holding the championship for her. And she does literally what we do get at the Oscars every single year, which I thought was phenomenal. And now for best in-ring performance. And the nominees are Mariah May. And the winner goes to you. And then she even like played around with like them having trouble opening the envelopes. And she's just like muppeting the whole entire thing with it. So she gets the award. She presents Mariah May the award. Mariah is coming up to receive it. It happens to be a shoe, which is hilarious. And then coming from the background, coming out of the base tunnel, which is still really weird at this point, Deonna Purrazzo comes out and she attacks Mariah May and Toni Storm, but then gets jumped 2-on-1 and they lay her out. So it seems that Toni and Deonna are not quite done. My theory is that Mercedes is going to be busy feuding with one other woman on Collision, which we'll talk about who I think that's going to be. And I think Deonna and Tony are going to be doing a rematch at Dynasty. But when that match is over, then I think we're done with Tony and Deonna for this chapter. But I love Deonna. I think that it was a crime against humanity that their match was was the shortest match at Revolution, clocking in only at 12 minutes and 13 seconds, which I understand because there was a bunch of other matches. But damn, I was just like, you're only women's match on the main card was less than 15 minutes. This was a shame. And if I'm being completely honest, as much as I love FTR and BCC, I feel we could have swapped their match with Chris, Willow, Julia, and Sky. Me personally, and swap their places.
Either that or just cut that match out and given time and put Willow. That's
The point being is I see that we're going to get a rematch. For me personally, I think Deonna is a great wrestler, but I think if we want to support her and Tony in this feud, I feel that Deonna needs to go back to her virtuosa heel character and be a heel. Because even though Tony is kind of leaning more towards the comedic heel, she is so over with the fans, and the fans are just organically behind her and cheering her regardless of what she does. I think that Deonna turning heel, for me personally, is where we get some of her best character work. And I know this because I got to see it when she was holding down the TNA Knockouts division for the last couple of years before coming over. And her virtuosa heel character is one of my favorite iterations of her, because she talks a lot of crap and she says she's going to beat you, but she has all the technical prowess to do so. And so I think Deonna being a heel, I think, would be a good balance out for this. I enjoyed the segment. I'm not mad that we're getting Tony and Deonna too, but I'm hoping that they turn Deonna heel in the process for this feud, because then I think it balances out and then I can cheer for both Tony and Deonna instead of cheering for Tony and then being worried when people are booing Deonna when she's not a heel. I made about a month ago
in Collision here, Deonna Purrazzo, I compared her to William Regal. I would like to retract that statement and compare her to Lance Storm. I feel like that's a very fair comparison. I feel like if not given a proper character, she does not have a ton of charisma, and it showcases a lot. She needs that direction. And the reason I say Lance Storm is because Lance was phenomenal in the ring, but he was very bland, you know, which is why he didn't get to be a world champion. Now, when I watch Deonna, I think the same thing. She's phenomenal in the ring, but she's a very bland babyface. Like, I think some people are specifically tailored to be a heel or face in professional wrestling, and she is not a babyface. It took Charlotte 8 years to be a good babyface. That's how long it took for her to be a good babyface. I feel like we're in that realm right now with Deonna. I don't know if she can be a babyface. She's not, the fans don't seem to be excited about her. They're more excited about, you know, Willow Nightingale than they are her. Now, Willow's, she's awesome. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like she's going to wind up getting herself like pushed out of this feud. And it's sad, but, you know, hopefully she gets a really good spotlight. Like she gets to go feud with Thunder Rosa or something like that, because Thunder's amazing.
Yeah, I totally agree that if you're gonna keep Deonna and Tony Storm as a feud, you're gonna have to add some spice to Deonna somehow, because you know Tony Storm, her character, even if she's not trying to, that timeless Tony Storm character is just all encompassing. You know what I mean? So, you know, and again, she might not even be, you know, meaning to do it like, you know, like doing like a Hulk Hogan type thing, you know? But yeah, Deonna's just gotta, she's gotta add some sort of spice. I would much like to see her do a heel thing so then that way we can actually recognize her for doing something, because yeah, she's just through, you know, it's been an all right feud, but it's been a little too vanilla.
So I mean, we can briefly talk about this because we kind of hinted at it when we did the Revolution review earlier in the week. I think the personal story that they were using to build up Tony and Deonna's feud leading into Revolution was probably my favorite thing that in terms of stories being built into Revolution, because there is that personal history. And the first couple of weeks that we were building to this was great, but then it kind of tailored off when they ran out of stuff to do with that. I feel that once we got that vignette of Tony getting a tattoo, which by the way, if she really tattooed that dagger through that duck on her leg, that is commitment and I love it. But I feel that once we got that part, we still had about 3 weeks until Revolution, and then we got those weird like anything you could do, I can do better like squash matches between the two of them. And then they kind of you know, then they had an awesome, you know, final confrontation where Toni Storm planted her lips on Deonna and then they brawled for Collision. But again, I think because for those who watch AEW who are not familiar with watching TNA and Deonna's work in there, she needs to be a heel in this situation. And I agree with what you said, Macho, mm-hmm. that some people are tailored to be baby faces. Some people are better to be tailored as heels. And I love Deonna's technical prowess, but her character work is some of my favorites when she's a heel. And if you don't believe me, go check up the build and the match that she had with Mickie James at Hard to Kill 2 years ago. And that Texas Death Match, that was the pinnacle culmination of Deonna being a heel and just brutalizing Mickie James leading into that match, which ended up being one of my mm-hmm. favorite matches. And that main event of the pay-per-view at Hard to Kill 2022. Like, that was a phenomenal match. But that's besides the point. I'm excited for Toni and Deonna too. I just hope that they turn Deonna heel in the process. We get a quick recap video of Riho versus Chris Statlander from Dynamite. Stooley Hathaway, as we call him around these parts, getting involved by trying to leave Chris the chain. She thinks about it, throws the chain out, which allows Riho to surprise and pick up the win here. And we get a recap with the promo later that Willow's going to be doing it her way and Stokely's going to have to fall around. But big business, Willow Nightingale versus Riho. I love Willow. She is one of the best baby faces in the women's division, point blank period. That is not an opinion. That is a fact. And for me, and as a side note, too, I love seeing Riho be back full time now. I love Riho. She's great. We need more Joshi wrestling in AEW, which, you know, AEW seemed to forget that she was one of your first AEW women's champion. So happy that she's being utilized. And I'm also kind of happy that Ring of Honor is using our other former women's champ there in Nyla Rose, because Nyla in Ring of Honor is great, but that's neither here nor there. So we'll talk more about how we feel about Willow versus Riho when we get to the bumpers, which then leads us into a very wacky world of matches and backstage segments for me. So out of nowhere, we decide that they're going to have Nick Wayne take on local talent Adam Priest. This is what I've wanted for a very long time. We have said that we know when Nick Wayne can go, but I don't know if it was injury or if they had nothing planned for him, but he was just used as a prop for the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. Now he's back in the ring doing stuff. And I forgot how crazy Nick Wayne is. I thought this was a fun match. Nick Wayne gets a win. Ultimately, the real purpose is what happened afterwards. I feel that. So the match itself, before we move on to what happened afterwards, does anyone have opinions on what we saw with Nick Wayne versus Adam Priest?
I have not seen a lot of Nick Wayne. To be honest, the majority that I've seen of Nick Wayne has been him just being plus one to Christian Cage, you know. So seeing him in the ring, I've seen the tape, so I know that wrestling wise, he knows what he's doing and he's good. I really enjoyed seeing his characterization in the ring, and finally seeing why he's a scummy heel part of the patriarchy, and just that, you know, that cheesy grin he kept shooting to the camera. Mm-hmm. Like when he got the pin, I don't know if you saw this when he got the pin, but he did a finger gun at the dude in the corner taking the pictures, or like the thumbs up or something like that. Like now I'm hooked. Now I'm sold to the Nick Wayne persona. So yes, give me more Nick Wayne, please.
Yeah, he's no longer plus one to Christian Cage. I came away thinking that it would have just been just as easy to have a promo so we can get to the Cope and Christian stuff, because this match and the next match, I really felt to myself that this could have been like a women's segment, or this could have been a women's match. I mean, the next match is god awful. I can't wait to talk about it. I've been thinking about this match like since last night. I laughed so hard, but yeah, let's get through the Christian stuff.
Oh my God. So the match ends, and then they're celebrating the ring, so they're lingering around the audience a little bit, in which Christian Cage then gets attacked by a CMLL person. Listen, I know we have to suspend our disbelief, but I'm like, commentary, I need you to turn it down. I was like, I'm not saying that Caucasian people can be luchadors en masse, because lucha libre should be for everyone as long as they put in the work. But come on. I was just like, that is the pastiest luchador that I have seen outside.
I think that's pastier than Gringo Loco. He's technically a luchador too
by style. And anyways, that's neither. Listen, El Generico is more lucha libre than what we saw. But so Christian Cage gets attacked by a masked individual, and everyone's like, the commentator's like, oh my gosh, CMLL is back attacking. I'm like, no, it's not. Calm down. I don't know if they did this on purpose, if the light person missed their cue. Like, I don't know what happened, but like, thankfully, because of the stage lighting, we saw that when the mask came off, it was Adam Copeland. But I was like, light person, you're fired. I was like, I don't know if we missed a cue or what happened, but it's dark in this shot. So Adam Copeland proceeds to take the championship, go into the ring, which then prompts the patriarchy to come into the ring as Copeland is holding this title hostage. Copeland has a box.
What's in the box?
And then I'm immediately screaming at the television screen, what's in the box?
Yeah, what's in the box? Yeah, well, to clarify, Adam Copeland grabs Christian's belt after knocking all the patriarchy out, right? He jumped, right. He went underneath the ring, grabbed that box, got into the ring by himself. Then Christian and the patriarchy like circle the ring and start coming in. And that's when Adam like cracks the box open and shows Christian what's in the box. And like Christian like calls the velociraptors off from the tall grass, you know, and they all like slink back in the darkness. It was, you know, it was over dramatic, and it was cheesy, but for my lizard brain, I'm looking
forward to seeing them finish this up in an I Quit match.
I dug it.
So
yeah. And find out what's in the box. What's in the box?
I don't know what's in the box. Like whatever it was made Christian back off. So I was like, sir, what is in there? Hopefully we get to see it in 2 weeks and during the I Quit match. So really quickly, we get a really awkwardly paced backstage promo with Mark Briscoe, Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, and the rest of the Double J squad, which is a lot of people. But the culmination of it is that Mark Briscoe trusts Jay Lethal. Mark Briscoe tells Jeff Jarrett that he don't like him, and neither do we. But, you know, when it comes to needing someone to do what it takes to win, especially in a street fight, Jeff Jarrett is the person. And basically, this is building up to our main event later in the evening. All right. I don't want to talk about this, but we have to talk about this. So we get our next match. We get the Lionheart, Chris Jericho, taking on CMLL staple. Titan. And before we talk about the match itself, first and foremost, I'm going to put commentary on blast. I know Spanish for lots of you is not necessarily your first language, ladies and gentlemen, but if Ian Riccaboni and Caprice Coleman can pronounce Spanish and Japanese names to the best of their ability and properly the way that they're supposed to, you guys need to do your job. Nigel, you kind of get a pass because you're British, so, you know, dialect-wise, it might be difficult, but Taz and everybody else on that commentary team, I need you to get it together. It's Titan, not Titan. I was just like, bro, there's no T-I-T. Like, what is happening? So commentary, you fail at your job in this match. But then we get to this match itself. Why did we have Titan take on Chris Jericho? I would have rather had him take on somebody else because he was fantastic. This is my first time seeing him, and I thought he did great. But why? Once again, are we throwing people into the Chris Jericho void because he did not need to win? Why did we have this match? I get Sammy is suspended, but like we couldn't have brought somebody up from ROH like Commander versus Ethan would have been great. Just like, I don't know.
All right, I'm gonna try to do this in 60 seconds here because I have so much to say. So anyway, Chris Jericho wrote in his first book how Hulk Hogan, at the end of his run, and all of the guys in WCW, that they refused to let younger guys be a part of the card. It was a big sticking point for him where he talks about it. And then just watching him do it now, the hypocrisy is ridiculous. We're literally watching Randy the Ram from The Wrestler go out there and work. That's what Chris Jericho has become. He's become Randy the Ram. And Randy was a better in-ring performer than Jericho is at this point in his career. When I'm watching him, I'm such a big Chris Jericho fan. That's why I'm so passionate about this. I cut school, jumped on the subway to go to WWF New York to buy the Y2J shirt, the three rules for being a Jerichoholic. I have that shirt in my attic. I'm never wearing that shirt again. This version of Chris Jericho might be everything he wrote about and complained in The Lion's Tale. And I genuinely don't know who he's helping. I don't know what this run is for. The only thing I could think of, based on money and that he's the second highest paid person in the company now behind Okada, that Tony's like, you know what, dude, I'm paying you $3 million a year. Just go out there and work people. That's it. I don't know.
I'm right there with you, Macho. I'm upset with where Jericho's at. What is he doing? What is he doing? And why? Why do they keep trying to make these obscure connections? Like, yeah, okay, I get it. He wrestled down in Mexico, right? And for a little bit and whatnot. But like, it seems like for some reason every luchador that they bring in, they're like, you know, 5 degrees of separation from Chris Jericho. It's like, stop it. You know, you're trying to force it. It's silly. Man, I like him on commentary, but
have you guys ever been to an indie show where an old wrestler from back in the day has performed on the show and you've just been really sad? What I'm thinking is like, have you ever seen like the Jake the Snake Roberts thing or the Scott Hall thing where he shows up at indie shows, like things like that? Like those were reserved for indie shows. And that's why I keep saying it's like Randy the Ram, because it's like watching the wrestler in real life. When I watch Chris Jericho, I'm thinking like, bro, save this shit for the indies. Go work like a little town. But like, going out here, like at this point in his career, if he's not going to be world champion, dude, you need to start putting over talent. Like, is this a part of the shtick? Is this like, oh, I'm going to keep winning because this is what gets me heat? Yeah. Is that what's happening right now? Because even winning a match, you should be able to get Titan over or Titan over. You're not doing that. Like, that kid has talent, and you can put him and showcase him, but Chris Jericho is singularly responsible for holding down Sammy Guevara's character to the point where he didn't even help him behind the scenes the way like a Sting helped a Darby Allin, like slow it down, save these big spots for these moments. Like, Sammy's out here thinking like, oh, I can give someone a concussion and then I'm going to give them a burning hammer right after. Like, they're just, because he doesn't have the right leadership behind him. Like, and that's what I mean. Like, what is Chris Jericho providing AEW? Because his name is not what it meant anymore. Like, I'm sorry. At this point, if we're looking at just name value and what's trending on X, his wife trends more for being at the insurrection January 6th than he does on weekly television. I don't know. Are you all right? Did you mute yourself so you could laugh hysterically?
Yes, because you are factually. And it's one of those things, and I'm going to channel Adolfo here, because we had a BC WrestlePod episode where we kind of took a peek behind the curtain and we talked about how as we've gotten older as wrestling fans, the heroes that we grew up with have turned out to be really crappy individuals. And Chris Jericho continues to be one of them, because I still use allegedly because nothing has further developed from that. But the whole point is that everything that allegedly had happened when we got word of what went down prior to World's End, and just everything that we saw in that match and how fast the crowd turned on Chris Jericho. And I still, Ricky starts flipping off Chris Jericho in that moment, and Darby Allin yelling "you piece of S" at Chris Jericho upon the entrance in that match was an indicator. I was just like, but it, yeah, it just sucks that Jericho is continuing to be put in this position. Now, if we put all, you know, allegedly what he has done aside, in-ring wise, it's like he's, and obviously he's still wrestling, so it's not fair, and he just retired. But I look at Jericho, I look at Sting. To me, Sting is a good example of how we do it right as we get older as wrestlers. Like, you're still on television, you're still a character, but as you said, Macho, we are working with younger talent and we're guiding them to own their craft and to be smarter and better about how they wrestle. Jericho has always been in this business for himself, and it continues to show. We've heard multiple occasions that Sammy never wants to be thrown back in with Jericho, because then his singles momentum is always stopped. Now, granted, if we push everything else that happens behind the scenes with Sammy, it's very true. And we're always throwing people into the Chris Jericho void. We had Sammy. Thank God Daniel Garcia was able to get away. And even to a certain extent, I'm kind of glad that Daddy Magic and Cool Hand were able to get away from JAS and Susanna Jay, because when all of them were together in that JAS faction, it was, nobody was going nowhere except for Jericho. And it just frustrates me that Jericho keeps getting all these opportunities. Again, if you wanted to showcase the Thun, I would have put him against, even though he was on Rampage, I would have put him against Action Andretti, a Commander. Shoot, give me the Bounty Hunter, I think would have been a fun match too, because there is a little bit of history between the Thun and the Bounty Hunter on the independent scene. Shoot, if you're going to have someone you trust to do this, I would even put a Matt Sydal or even the Fallen Angel himself, Christopher Daniels, to be on there. I mean, you taped Ring of Honor the same night as Collision, so you could put those two on there too. There are just other people that, I don't want to say deserve because that sounds bad, but there are better people to be put in this position. I don't know. It frustrates me.
Yeah. Here, let's get through it. We're almost at the hour.
I'm moving on. Yeah. So we then get an in-ring promo from FTR that basically state that they're going to be in this tag tournament that's coming up for the titles. They're coming up on 10 years of FTR, which is fantastic. And then they get interrupted by, surprisingly, the Infantry. So Carly Bravo and Sean Dean come out. They state that they're going to be entering the tournament too. They respect the Revival. I'm just kidding. FTR, because they did drop that line. It's like, it's time for the Revival. And then FTR answered back to end the promo that the Revival is dead, and then so is the Infantry. I like seeing the Infantry get to shine. They're one of my favorite tag teams in Ring of Honor right now. And I don't mind them being part of this tournament, especially since, you know, our Ring of Honor tag champs are nowhere to be seen to defend those things in ROH, because they're stuck in the Adam Cole universe of madness now. We're going to be here all day, but I'm going to reserve that for Ring of Honor, because it's Athena's show, literally, for Ring of Honor. It really is. She's our only champion, and she's the only one that matters right now in Ring of Honor, because she's constantly defending that title on Ring of Honor every so often. So she is the world champion, not the women. She's the world. And that, I love Eddie, but I need Eddie more around. But I'm excited for this tag tournament. And as much as I would love to see the Infantry get a push and FTR putting them over, I was like, it's going to be FTR and the Bucks.
That's
the
what finals. I see too. Like, I do love the how the tag division needs a little bit of the Revival, because I think it's universally known that the Revival's better than FTR. Like, I think people kind of know that. And I think that Dax and Cash keep trying their hardest to kill the Revival, but it's never going to happen, guy. Like, what you are in FTR is like a shell of yourself. Like, you're nowhere near, you don't even work the same style matches. Like, the matches that they worked as the Revival, the style in which they worked, the promos in which they cut, was just at such a higher level. You can keep trying, but when you finish your promo, top guys out, you're the Revival. Like, I'm sorry. That's their catchphrase. That's what they say. So I don't know what you want me to do. Like, that's what I'm going to see. But yeah, it's going to be the Bucks, and it's going to be, you know, FTR. And, you know, Dave Meltzer is going to cream himself like he always does, because this is like his favorite thing ever. But I'm not. It's fine. Just like the 90s when it was like the Cat versus Stacy Keibler in a pillow fight, the Revival versus the Young Bucks will be my bathroom break.
No,
just not interested. Yeah, man. I don't want to see it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, no, and, you know, we discussed this during the Revolution review too. FTR versus BCC. I thought, had we not gotten the time limit draw match we had 2 weeks before the pay-per-view, I would have thought it was fantastic, but we literally got the same match, except there was a definitive winner at Revolution versus the match they had 2 weeks ago. I was like, you should have just kept them apart, but that's neither here nor there. And I thought we were going somewhere with FTR's character because they were getting beyond the character, and then they reverted back to what they do. I'm like, damn it, you guys. But I still think the tournament's going to be fun. If the Ring of Honor Women's TV tournament has shown me, if they really wanted to, they can pleasantly surprise you. Like, who knew that Red Velvet would beat Layla Hirsch and Queen Aminata would beat Taya to advance into the tournament? Has been very phenomenal, and I love that. So from here, now we get into our bumpers for Big Business. So Jay White versus Darby Allin. Willow Nightingale versus Riho. We're getting our sixth man of Pac, Kingston, and Penta versus the New Elite. We also got word that because of how awful the Jericho match was, I forgot to talk about, Hook came out for the save. Now it's Chris Jericho and Hook taking on the Gates of Agony, which makes me sad because I like the Gates, and they're going to lose this match, unfortunately. And it makes me really sad. And then, of course, for the AEW World Championship, Joe versus Wardlow. I'm like, damn, they didn't wait for what? Yeah. They didn't wait long to let Wardlow lose this match.
Any wrestling fan who watches these pay-per-views or premium live events, here's one thing I can tell you. As someone who grew up watching wrestling for the past 35 years of my life, there's been one time in my life where I've legitimately seen a wrestler as heartbroken. And when I'm talking heartbroken, I mean, like, your girlfriend just broke up with you in high school and is now dating the most popular guy in school. Like, that type of heartbroken. Almost like there's nothing you could do to win them back. That's what I got out of Mercedes' interview this week. Her almost in tears talking about WWE. Her talking about, I will be back there one day. And it felt very much like Brett and Vince in 97. I think she took the money for AEW. I don't think she's happy. I think she's kind of, I don't think that she would have been a big star had she gone back to WWE because of what they're doing right now. And she knows that. And she kind of waited too long. Had she come back at like 8 months ago, she'd probably be in a prime spot. But now there's just too much going on in the women's division. You're going to be an afterthought. You're going to wind up being the LA Knight of the women's division, where you're popular, but what do we do with you? And if I'm an AEW fan, like which I am, but I'm saying, like, if I'm an AEW fan looking at this company excited for Mercedes, I can tell she's already not happy that she's working for this company. She doesn't want to be there. And if you don't believe me, go back and watch that interview. Don't listen to it like on Spotify or something. Watch it. Watch her cry. Watch her heartbreak. Watch her face change. The complexion of her skin go from like beautiful coffee to like pale. Like, she looks like she's heartbroken. And she may try to justify her decision, but it's sad And I think the people that are excited for Boston and for her to come out, they'll be excited initially, but I think we'll definitely see whether or not she wants to be there.
Yeah, and honestly, like, the way that I took it too is like, people are mad at her. It's like, how dare, no. I was like, there's nothing wrong with her signing for the paycheck and the bag. And I was just like, I mean, wrestling fans can be really crazy. I was like, I'm not mad at her for admitting that she signed to you know, for the money and then also to have a couple dream matches before going back to WWE. I was like, you want to go to company, not only to own your craft, but to be able to wrestle people you normally wouldn't if you stay in the same company for the rest of your career, which I think her going to New Japan was great because she got to have some fun matches before getting hurt. I think there's some cool opponents for Mercedes to face in AEW for however long her contract is with AEW. And which brings me to the fact that I think potentially it might be Mercedes and Serena for a little bit, which would be interesting. But who knows? We'll see what happens with that. Honestly, I never know what AEW is going to do with the women's division, and I'm always very hesitant. I've been pleasantly surprised the last couple of months or so by how much I've enjoyed the women's stuff, but we need more of it, and we need more.
I want to see Sasha or Mercedes and Willow.
So we get into the main.
That injury took that match away from me.
Yeah, that is a match we did not get. Yeah. I was like, they were doing great until Mercedes called that audible during that match when she got hurt. So I would love to exactly. And I would love to see a match where those two actually get a chance to finish from bell to bell to be able to do it, which I think will be fantastic. We get to our main event. Just kidding, because we had another singles match randomly put. This was the weirdest placement of this match. And I love the two people involved in this, but we could have put this towards the first hour of the show because we had Místico taking on Angelico. I thought this was a fun match. Both of their styles are very unique and different. I enjoyed it for what it was. It just
they should have opened the show.
My own biggest critique is I felt like this was placed in the wrong spot of the show. I was like, honestly, it should have because I like Místico. I like Angelico. And of course, Serpentico, not John Cruz for Nyla Rose, just putting it out there. I'll give you the context behind it. It is the best thing that Nyla Rose is
that's
doing.
That's what makes her great.
You know, her internet game is so much fun. I don't really have much to say. It's so good. But I enjoyed this match. I like both of them. But again, I feel like it was placed in the wrong spot. It wasn't inherently bad. I really enjoyed it. And it did help to see, all right, so it washed the taste out of my mouth.
This took a playbook out of WCW. Back in the day, Nitro used to do this where the show would be kind of somber and it wasn't like super enticing, but they knew they had a big main event like a Scott Hall versus like a Kurt Hennig or like a Goldberg versus like a Raven. And they wanted you to watch that main event, so they had to draw you back in. So let's just throw out a Cruiserweight match real quick, even though they opened the first hour. Let's give us two cruiserweights that we don't really look at. So give us like Lodi versus Billy Kidman. And let's just have them go out there. And when Billy hits that shooting star press, people will be excited and they'll be up out of their feet, you know, out of their seats. And then we can watch Goldberg squash somebody, and, you know, so we can captivate the crowd. That's what I felt like it was like. It was all about getting people to watch House of Black versus, you know, Team Jarrett or whatever they're called, the Jarrett family or whatever it's called. But yeah, I mean, to me, it doesn't matter as long as I get to see more, you know, Tommy End or Malachi Black or Aleister Black or whatever you want to call him. Just give me more of him, you know, give me more and Brody and Buddy and this three person team. My God, how are they not running this entire company? If I were a writer, I would be treating them like The Undertaker. They would be running everything. It would be like the Wyatt family. I don't understand why they're not at that point in this company. I don't get it.
Well, okay. Well, since we're talking about House of Black, let's just jump into our main event. This was an Atlanta street fight that saw the House of Black taking on Mark Briscoe, Jay Lethal, and Jeff Jarrett. We know that when it comes to street fights, it's not going to be structured the way it should, and that's okay. Really quickly, some of my favorite spots. Brody doing the cannonball into the table outside of the ring was crazy. I thought Mark Briscoe broke a couple of vertebrae when he landed on those chairs. And the sound upon impact hurt me. I like watching Julia Hart missed Karen Jarrett. I laughed when the guitar did not break when when Brody got hit with it, which was funny. I was like, that is a lot. That is a brick wall on that bag that did not break that guitar. Like, I'm like, Brody King, you're, the surface area of you is a mystery. And then, of course, the flaming table spot. I love that as soon as Mark Briscoe went through it. I love what, just because of how pro they are watching Malachi and Buddy Matthews quickly pat out the flames as quickly as they can and throw him in the ring to prevent injury. House of Black win as they should. But I mean, now Jeff Jarrett is doing his job. Where are we going now with this?
He's doing his job by putting over talent. He's past his prime. I mean, he's still a better in-ring performer than Chris Jericho is, and I think he ever was. But, I mean, he's putting over talent, and he's doing it in such a marquee way. Jay Lethal, someone who I've actually, like, stood inside of a professional wrestling ring with during training, he's past his prime as well. And he's putting over talent. Sad to see that Tony Khan just didn't strike while the iron was hot and make Briscoe a bigger deal, because I feel like he could be the face of Ring of Honor right now. But for some reason, Tony just doesn't know his ass from his elbow. And it's sad to see that with Briscoe. But it's clear that somebody backstage knows, like, okay, older talent puts over younger talent. And House of Black is a big deal, and they are a top group, and they should be running. Like, when I look at the pecking order of this company, MJF is the face of AEW. He is the face. If I were running this company, right on par with him would be House of Black. They would be, like, the biggest group. They would be, like, the top thing, because they have everything. They have three absolute phenomenal performers from all different styles. You have the promo ability of Alistair, and then you have the in-ring ability of Buddy, and then you have, like, your version of Abyss or Bam Bam Bigelow, or you have that big dude who can work everybody. And I don't understand why we're not seeing it. I don't know. When I look at this whole AEW collision, what we watched last night, I feel like there's more bad than good, though. So I'm giving it, like, 2 empanadas.
All right. Well, that will take us into our rating scale. So we are implementing the empanada scale across all of our shows.
The
so
lack
out of 10,
women representation on the show. The
damn.
The quick matches. The misplacement of the card, the Jericho segment. The wonkiness of the Jarrett and Briscoe and that segment was very strange. Now, I love the pre-main event. I just can't forgive the fact that we got Jericho versus Titan, and you guys didn't think to take all those minutes. And if you were going to give us one women's match, why not just give it to Mariah? And why not just give those women, like Mariah and Trish, why not give them, like, a longer match? So to me, I just didn't think it was. This might have been the worst collision I've seen since the inception of it, which is very strange because they've been on a hot streak.
I will agree. I will slightly give it a higher score. I will give it a 5 out of 10. But I think what really did it is, like, for me, this was a show of two halves. The first hour I thought was really good. You know, we had Danielson and Shane Taylor, which was phenomenal. You know, the Elite squash match setting up for a match at Big Business was great. Even though it was short, I love Trish and Mariah, and I love the Tony Award that we got, which was a fun little segment. But then past Nick Wayne and Adam Priest's match is when things got weird. That promo from Double J and the crew was weird. Jericho versus Titan was not great. putting Místico and Angelico in here was really weird placement. It was, and then FTR's promo didn't do it for me either. So I'm going to give this a 5 out of 10. I still enjoyed the first hour, but the second hour was like I was in Bizarro World. For those of you who
I just kind of look at it as like,
I was like, I'm just in a Bizarro World. Like,
Dynamite was really good this week. So I feel like what they did was they just ran out of gas. They had Revolution. Dynamite was really good. And that's just kind of how I look at it.
Rampage was fun last. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rampage was fun on Friday. So, yeah, I was like, one of the shows was going to suffer. I hate that it was Collision this week. But the beautiful thing is that they have a chance to continue to be one of my favorite of the AEW programming next week. All right. So me and Macho are going to get up on out of here. So thank you so much for tuning in to another Collision Collective review. Make sure to check us out here on the Biconics YouTube channel. Make sure you follow in the link below where you can explore our Next Level feed. Shout out to Next Level. The BC WrestlePod is a Next Level sponsor. So we are partnering up with them for a contest. And now I can actually announce this here because it's been going on. But do you like wrestling? Do you want to attend WrestleMania? Well, we have something for you. Make sure to check out the link below in the description to get all the details of that. But Next Level is partnering up with all their creators to run a contest for someone to get a full flight and 2 tickets to WrestleMania 40. All those details can be found in the description below. You can follow us all over the social medias at BC WrestlePod, which is super fantastic. If you can't commit to watching our beautiful faces on the internet, you can now take us on the go because we have audio versions of all our reviews. So you can listen to us while you're at work, while you're studying for the test, or, you know, if you're just trying to drown out your, you know, annoying friends and family, you can listen to us. Welcome. It is a great time. And then, of course, if you want to see us live and in person, the BC WrestlePod boys, we're taking a field trip and you can see us at the New Jersey WrestleCon Saturday, May 18th and Sunday, May 19th. We're going to have a table there. Come out and say hi. Come talk to us. We're going to be selling some cool merch being designed for the convention. And I'm just letting all the wrestling talent that's going to be there know. Just a warning, especially the women's wrestlers, we are huge proponents of women's wrestling, so we may scream like little girls when we get to meet you. It's going to be fantastic. But from myself, Luis, Adolfo, and the rest of the Biconics boys, remember, take care of yourself, love one another, and as always, stay Biconic, all you guys, gals, non-binary pals, ishi theys, and gays of the internet. We will see you next week.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another Vibe Tribe production. What's going to happen next time? Well, you're going to have to tune in to find out. But until then, remember, take care of yourself, love one another, and as always, make sure that you keep the good times rolling. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you next time.